I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubblegum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to the All Out of Bubblegum podcast. I am Marty, and today I'm joined by Brendan.
Hello.
And Alberto.
Hello.
Hello. Today we're going to talk about a movie that not a lot of people have seen, I feel. Because recently we did another Top 250. If you've been following the podcast, you know about. If you've been checking out the website, you know about it. But how that worked was every movie from the previous Top 250 that we did 10 years ago was eligible. And then everybody was allowed to nominate 25 more movies. And there were two movies that received a perfect 10 score from only one vote. One of those was the Bud Spencer Terence Hill classic Watch Out, We're Mad, which I absolutely love. And also I was the only one to have seen it. And the other one is the movie we're here to talk about today, which is Bohachi Bushido, Code of the Forgotten Eight, which you nominated, Alberto.
Yeah, that's right. I did. I did nominate it.
You are now going to be sent to an insane asylum.
Yeah, I am. A movie that I saw 7 years ago and I was just like, oh yeah, this is like a action masterpiece. I'm going to put this on the list. It's going in. I love it. It looks amazing. It's super badass. Let's put it on there. And then I rewatched it like a couple days ago, and to my horror, it was like, good God, 50% of it is just sex and nudity. You know, I'm not a prude.
Yes.
And, you know, it was really well shot, sex and nudity. There were a couple other things in there that I know you guys were like really like, oh what? Oh, no. No. That if you're not so familiar with Japanese exploitation cinema, you will be shocked and dismayed by the level of just wanton misogyny and sexual violence that are in these films. It's just total disregard, by the way.
It's wild. This is an intervention, Alberto. You need help.
Yeah.
We're here to help you, Alberto.
Look, I'm a toey masochist, you know? It's it's my life. You know, I'm...
What's your life? Okay.
Yeah, this is what I live for here, okay, fellas?
This movie makes Michael Winner seem like a prude.
Yes, exactly. Death Wish 2 is like family fun for everyone in comparison to this.
You could say that again.
Yeah, Death Wish 2 is like a Winnie the Pooh movie compared to this film. It's just ridiculous. I mean, I was watching this movie and I was just like, how much more do I have to watch of this crap? It is just insane. Like the amount of misogyny and violence. I was okay with the non-sexual violence, but the sexual violence that was just like nonstop, it's too much. I hated this movie.
That's the one thing keeping it back from being a 10 out of 10 for Brandon.
Yeah, the one thing that takes up like 90% of the runtime. But I will give credit where credit's due. The opening scene is great.
Yes, promises a lot.
Yes, it promises a lot. It's set on a bridge with a setting sun in the background, and it's very stylized. It looks like something out of like a silent film almost. And we have some like a samurai fighting some opponents. Every time the swords cross, there's like a explosion of sparks all over the place. He's cutting people's heads off and their limbs off, and there's beautiful blood spray.
Yeah, the title gets formed in blood.
Yes, that tells you a lot about what's going to come up, and it's just, it's a beautiful scene, and then it all goes downhill from there. It goes downhill real fast from there.
Yeah, the main character figured out what was going to happen in the movie and was just like, I need to kill myself. Like, that's literally what happens. He's just like, I'm sick of this. Just jumps off the bridge.
Which
is ironic because he ends up surviving because he jumped off the bridge, where if he would have stayed on the bridge, he would have died.
Yeah. He would have died fighting like 90,000 people.
Yeah, he's a man of many contradictions, as you will see in the film.
Yes.
Yes. And 99% of the dialogue in this movie is either people going, "Oh," or some like guy saying like, "Living is hell and dying is hell." And then that's like, that line is repeated like 20,000 times throughout the runtime.
I thought it was
funny. And I agree. After this, watching this movie is hell.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious how when like some woman actually mocks him about it, and he just slices her ear off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's dark.
But then the rest of the movie seems to really dislike it when other people mistreat women.
Yeah, and even though the filmmaker is disrespecting women on a wild scale, it's interesting. I mean, it's horrible, but it's interesting to watch. Yes. Probably the worst action movie I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man, that's like, that is a brutal statement.
Yeah. Only among action movies, though.
I was not expecting, well, before I rewatched the film, I wasn't expecting this reception. But
no, it's all right. You gotta like what you like.
Yeah, afterwards I was like, okay, yeah, I'm not gonna like be like, oh yeah, well, you just didn't get it. Like, no, I'm like, yeah, I understand. You know, it's like, this movie's like rough in places.
Rough
maybe
in
all
like
over
all
the
places.
Place. Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah, I'd seen the trailer and I was like, oh my god, this looks great. It's like an action movie, but with loads of nudity. Awesome. No, it isn't.
Well, it does have loads of nudity, and it is an action movie, but...
Yes. It's not as awesome as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
When it is an action movie, it's fantastic. It's crop. But
I wouldn't go that far, but, I mean, the action scenes are really not that bad, especially the opening scene, which is actually very promising. I mean, you watch that opening scene and you're like, oh, this is gonna be good. I can't wait to see what this film shows. Then it's like, oh wait, it's just a rape film. Never mind.
That's even the opening scene that you're referring to is actually just the opening credits.
Yeah.
But it pauses on images of blood spurting from bodies. It's kind of great.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
We've only been praising the opening titles.
Yeah.
It's the only thing. Okay, the only things worthy of being praised in this piece of trash are the opening and ending action scenes and the lighting. The lighting is kind of surprisingly good. I mean, there's lots of psychedelic stuff going on. This was the very early 70s, but other than that, this movie is just exploitation hyper trash.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, to see the director in his early beginnings go from like B-grade action films to this. Like, you're all probably wondering, like, what happened?
Yeah.
And the Japanese film industry is what happened. Because I think it was like the mid to late 60s is when action films began to like fall out of favor. And, you know, everybody just started watching TV. Like, the majority of people. Like, the only people going to the movies were perverts and criminals. Usually a combination of the two.
Yeah.
So, the movies had to get rougher and edgier to make money. So, it was either that, or you just make straight-up porn without penetration shots. Because Japan is weird like that. You know, you can have rape and murder, but you can't show genitalia.
Or pubes.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah. Like, everybody's like, oh, I gotta cover up my shame now after, like, I get chop off a guy's head. You know, it's kind of unusual.
Yeah, there's actually a part in the movie where they actually blur the genitalia during a sex scene.
Yeah.
If you notice it. It's like, it's noticeable when you notice it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Teru Ishii is the director, and he started off doing, like, some pretty good, you know, B-movie work. I think he's known for doing some sci-fi stuff, like Invasion from Space. I haven't seen it, but it looks like it's, you know, got a following. And I've seen a couple of the early gangster movies that he did. Some of the ones that had such actors as Ken Takakura and Koji Tsuruta that are excellent. especially in Outlaw with Ken Takakura, which is actually one of the main influences on John Woo's The Killer.
Hmm, really? I love John Woo's The Killer. That's a nice movie where people don't take off their clothes.
Nobody takes off their clothes. Well, at least as far as I remember in that one.
Yeah.
It's not a shoot 'em up like The Killer, so don't expect that. But it's a good crime drama.
Okay.
But I think Oh yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say this kind of evolution of Japanese cinema. It almost kind of parallels Hollywood in a way. Obviously, Hollywood was a lot less extreme. But during this time in Hollywood, the 1967, 1968 period, you had, the downfall of the production code, which dictated what content could and couldn't be in American movies. So you had, more extreme content coming out in American movies. But it was obviously, very tame compared to this piece of trash we're talking about right now.
I also think that you had, the sexual revolution going on in a lot of places at the same time.
That too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and with the sexual revolution came a lot of dark stuff.
Yeah, as usual, the Japanese took it too far.
Yes.
they went full Nanjing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Japanese culture and I, we're not on the same wavelength. I don't really get anime, or at least most of it. I don't really get honor culture, and I sure as hell don't get this. So it's not really a surprise to me that I didn't understand this movie, but Japan and I mean, I'd support the United States going to war to protect them from China or Russia, but our cultures, I don't know, I just don't get it.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
But I think the main point I was going to get at here was that around, I want to say, 67, 68, probably 68, Ishii, after doing, a 10-film run over 2 years on the Abashiri prison films with Ken Takakura, which I've only seen the first one, but it's basically, what is it? What's that one with Tony Curtis and...
Defiant Ones?
Yeah, the Defiant Ones. It's basically Japanese, the Defiant Ones.
Oh, okay.
Although the other ones are prison escape movies, then it's revenge. Time to get payback.
Ooh. Now those sound like something I'd want to watch.
Yeah, I think you probably would like those ones. I don't know. I haven't seen the sequels, but I do have the Blu-ray that has the other two, the first three films. So,
nice.
I'll let you know. I don't know. Maybe we can do an episode on those.
Ooh, tempting.
But yeah. So he does two period piece films that are that have erotic elements in them. Because, the studios were yo, we'll let you go hog wild with style and, all this other creative stuff you want to do, but as long as you put sex in the movie. And he's like, okay, all right, I'll do that. And
okay.
Apparently, it was apparently these films were so financially successful that they let him just keep going. And the movies became more violent and more depraved. And
yeah, I believe it.
Batshit insane. as I saw just a couple hours ago, watching through Shogun's Joy of Torture, which was it's basically a Tales from the Crypt, but in feudal Japan type of movie.
So it's an anthology film,
yeah,
kind of?
Yeah, it is an anthology film. I wasn't so big on the first, this is going to turn into a Taro Ishii episode, actually. But, yeah, the first story was just pitiful melodrama with an incestuous twist.
Oh, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, nobody wants to see that. They want to see nun action.
Yeah,
get a little nun-sploitation in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the second story was great. Just an evil abbot nun who gets her canumpance at the end. But I would recommend it for the last two stories. Although, I don't know, you might not like that, Brandon. I think there's even worse stuff in that film.
Oh, no.
I mean, maybe not content-wise. It may not have as much rape, but it makes up for it with some of the truly depraved stuff. Especially in Orgies of Edo. Oh, God. That one's even more batshit insane. and gross.
No, I don't want to imagine that.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no orgy in it, but it's...
Oh, okay.
It's definitely an orgy of blood and sex.
Okay.
And not so consensual. All right. Sex.
Oh, no. This is wild. This is saying a lot about Japanese culture, perhaps.
Yeah, but Blind Woman's Curse, now that you would enjoy. With Miko Kaji, oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's
That
shit insane.
Is that normal?
No.
Okay, so it's not...
It's not normal, but...
Okay, well...
But, you know, okay. You won't be... Your eyes will not be burned alive from...
Okay. I won't feel the need to gouge out my own eyes watching it. Or slice my ears off.
In 1973, he released this.
Yeah, this is wild for the time. Early any time, I guess. And there's a kind of a connection to a previous episode we did. We talked about Metropolis a little bit. And how the red light district of Metropolis is called Yoshiwara.
That's right.
And the red light, and the red light district in this film is called Yoshiwara, which is supposedly based on a real place.
I knew you were going to make that connection as soon as I listened to the episode.
Let's make this a Metropolis episode again. Yeah. So we can talk about something that isn't Code of the Forgotten Eight.
Oh my god, it's got a Metropolis reference. 10 out of 10. Oh my god.
Yes. Oh, this is the greatest film I've ever seen. I'm totally reevaluating it as we go along here. You're watching a man reevaluate his film in a 1 out of 10 film in real time, people.
Yeah.
This is Metropolis. Part 2, the prequel.
Yeah. You're beginning to see the vision.
Yes. The dystopian vision.
So is this movie part of the pinku genre?
I would probably say so. Yeah, definitely. It's definitely pinky violence.
Ooh.
Which that's basically understatement. Just like a exploitation film with a lot of softcore scenes in it and tons of violence.
Yeah.
I've seen plenty of those. But, you know, I don't think to the extent that this I mean, look, I think Brandon's kind of overstating how much rape is in this movie. I mean, there's definitely a lot. But it's not like I would say it's like about 30% of the movie. And it does make an impression on your mind. But
yeah.
I mean, that's definitely a lot for a film. But, in the movie's defense, it's not, like, the whole thing.
No, but I will say it's not so much the quantity as more how the movie deals with it.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a little too pornographic. You know,
misogynistic is the word that would come to my mind.
Yeah.
Yes.
That too, just the lack of care, if you
will. Yeah, there's, like, no moral compass here.
Just a completely immoral film.
Yes.
Beginning to sound like Siskel and Ebert over here, you know?
Circa. Yes. 1960s. Oh, I'd like to see them review this movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I don't know if Roger Ebert would hate it or just be like, yeah, this is it. This is subversive. This is a masterpiece. I don't know. Like, honestly, yeah, I think he would be because he was quite the prude.
Yeah. Right, he had a reputation for that.
If he got, like, mad over Blue Velvet, could you even imagine what he would think over this movie?
Oh my gosh, I don't even want to think about it. He'd be repping this one a new one. Or he'd leave halfway through. I hated this film.
He would have to reevaluate his opinion on Blue Velvet and be like, you know what? I took David Lynch wrong. You know, I mistook him for a pervert. When in fact, he had a valid message.
Yeah, revenge, yes.
So lucky, if I can just steer us back to the plot a bit.
Okay.
We've had the excellent opening credits scene. And then Tetsuro Tamba jumps into the river. And he gets found later on nearly frozen to death by the Bohachi Bushido clan.
Yep. That's what happens. I mean, it kind of just cuts to him in their, brothel. Like in one of their rooms or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like every room in this movie is some sort of brothel or something.
It do be like that in the movie.
Yes.
Yes. And he gets fucked back to life, basically.
Yeah. All these naked women are stroking him like all over the place, massaging him or whatever you want to call it. Whatever heals a man back to life from being frozen nearly to death.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the guy who I guess who's in charge of all the goons shows up, and it's the actor who would go on to play the same character that Tetsuro Tamba is playing in another Buhachi Bushido film the next year.
Oh.
Called The Villain. Ooh. But
The Villain? Okay.
Yeah, it's literally the same. It's the actor who would play. So he's talking to the character that he's going to eventually play a year later.
Okay.
But he's trippy. Just like, yo, bro, you want to join the Bohachi Bushido clan? We know the laws after you, and we're pretty immoral. You know, we don't follow the tenets of the Bushido, of the Buddhist, the eight laws.
Shinto.
I think it's yeah.
Mm.
That's why they're forgotten. They're forgotten laws. Forgotten eight.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird title because it's not the clan isn't eight men who are forgotten. And they have a code. Just the clan is an X amount of men, and they have a code that is forgotten. Except it isn't forgotten because they know it.
Yeah, I don't understand the title at all.
And the code makes no sense either.
It's just treat women like trash.
No, I wrote them down actually.
It's the tenets of Buddhism, and it's basically an inverse of that.
Oh.
Hmm. Yeah, but so the eight codes are you must forget godliness, then two, you must forget obedience and fidelity toward your elders, then three, loyalty toward your friends, you must forget, obviously, you must forget how to trust your allies, you must forget modesty, you must forget justice, you must forget your conscience in order to forget everything else, and you must forget you have shame. But like, you must forget loyalty towards your friends and how to trust your allies. How is that a good code?
Sign me up. Yeah, it's kind of like, who would do that? Who would sign up for that? Like, hey, we got a new thing. We're literally bad guys. You want to join us? It's like, okay, I want to be a bad guy.
You want to join us? If you do, you must know that you cannot trust us. That's one of our codes.
Yeah, I think they're trying to do like an honor among thieves. No honor among thieves type of philosophy, but there are some holes in that, but
yeah, it's no way to run a business.
As we'll see, it's like, what the fuck were you thinking?
Yeah, it's like, how could this go wrong? It does. Very wrong.
Let's totally not double cross this absolute killing machine.
Yeah, because he's infamous. They've heard of him, right?
Yeah, I mean, the opening pretty much establishes that this guy's like no chump. I mean, if he's got that many lawmen after him, you know he must be serious business.
Mm-hmm. So he just goes around Japan chopping people's heads off, and then he's like, I'm going to join these brothel owners who have no sense of justice. They know it. I don't know.
I mean, he kind of just like goes along with it. He's just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I was going to ask, does he ever actually join them? Does he ever say, yeah, sure? I don't think he does.
He's just kind of indifferent the whole movie until they eventually try to fuck him over.
Yeah.
Which was inevitable. I think
he doesn't make for a very interesting protagonist because he's so completely indifferent to everything, and everything he does so contradictory to everything else he does.
Yeah, this is a good way of putting it. Because he seems like he'd be a hero at times, and then other times he just feels... It's inconsistent, the way he's portrayed, I'd say.
Yeah, he seems like a hero one scene, and the next scene he chops a woman's ear off for no reason.
Exactly. There's like no consistency with his character. Unless there's like some ulterior motive or something, but I don't know. I really don't know.
Guys, to be fair, that woman was mocking his nihilistic philosophy. All right? She had it coming. All right? You lose an ear for talking Yeah, if you're talking like that, talking smack about nihilism, all right? That's what you get.
For somebody who's a nihilist and doesn't believe in anything, he gets really upset when people diss his beliefs.
Yeah, it's like, I'm so apathetic, I'll cut your ear off right now.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe that was like just part of a character arc that was in the manga, which
Oh.
I don't think we've mentioned that yet, but it's based off of a manga by Kazu Koyoke, who did Lone Wolf and Cub and Lady Snowblood and Crying Freeman. So, you know.
A lot of good stuff.
One of the goats.
Hmm. Yeah, like 85% of Japanese cinema is based on this pervert.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just wait till you read Crying Freeman. Oh, man. There's some gross stuff in there. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but they had to cut the plot line from the movie because it didn't have any rape in it. So he sort of goes along with the Boachi Bushido clan and they play some sort of game on him where they try to... What actually are they trying?
I think they're trying to test if he's like worth inducting into the clan.
Oh, but, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He basically fails the vibe check because, surprise, surprise, he actually has some decency to not rape a woman who's been tied down.
Who was also part that's of right. the clan.
Yeah, she's one of the naked female warriors within the clan.
Oh, she was?
Yeah, they have these, like, female members of the Bohachi clan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just roam around. Well, I mean, they're not naked, but, I mean, they are naked in, like, indoors and after they've, like, we'll get to that scene, but, you know.
Yeah. So our hero is not a rapist yet.
Yeah, he has not crossed the Rubicon of rape.
Yeah. And there are a few action scenes scattered throughout the middle of the film, and they're okay. I mean, I really like the beginning and ending action scenes, but the ones in the middle, I mean, they're okay. I mean, they're not bad, but they seem to be pretty typical for, like, a film of this type.
Yeah, there's one standoff scene where all the lights dim and all we're left with is two spotlights on the main players. It's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, the lighting is probably the best part of this movie, which is a weird compliment to give, but it kind of makes sense considering the rest of it is, like, the worst thing I've ever watched in my life. Yeah, but, like, go ahead.
Yeah, it looks like a Nicholas Winding Refn film. Like if he did a samurai film.
I guess I could see that. Yeah, I could kind of see that, I guess. I haven't seen much of his work, but, I mean, Only God Forgives does kind of give similar vibes.
Yeah.
And somewhere around this point in the movie, I think we're introduced to the actual leader of the clan, the big boss, who's a old guy with rotten teeth.
Yes, the teeth are the most remarkable thing about him, especially when they're shown in close-up.
I believe somebody mocks his, like, rotten teeth. He's like, yeah, get away from me, you rotten old bastard.
I mean, that's a fair way to describe him. He is a rotten old bastard.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He's an interesting character as far as this film goes, I guess. I mean, you hate him, which is, I guess, what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, everyone in this movie is kind of a bastard.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
And he does meet an interesting fate if we want to go into spoilers right now. But the main villain, he doesn't get killed exactly, directly, like on screen. He gets thrown into prison with this, like, lady who's, like, covered in syphilis boils, and they shag, I guess, is the polite way of putting it. And, yeah. That's how he gets syphilis, I guess, and dies. I don't know.
Yeah, he basically gets forced to, like, smoke a tainted thing of, like, opium, which mm-hmm. he gave to the hero. Well, the anti-hero.
Yeah. And it's then, like, they throw him in prison with a syphilitic lady.
Yeah, so the combination of having a bit of a twirl with a woman of such persuasion, you know, hey, you know, I don't think we'll be seeing him in the sequel anytime soon, unless he's, like, rotting away. He's like,
his, like, arms are falling off and stuff. Maybe I do want to watch the sequel now. No, I don't. But anyway.
Yeah, but before we get there, he has a plan to monopolize prostitution.
Yeah, well, I think the character, well, I mean, the clan had that territory, and then others came in and were basically encroaching on it. So he's just like, all right, we got to take care of this. All right.
You know, others and women just working for themselves.
Yeah.
So it's you could see this as a commentary on capitalism, maybe, if you really wanted to.
Yeah. This is what the free market does.
Yeah.
They rape you. They put you in brothel, and then you're made into a psychopathic female gangster criminal or whatever the hell you want to call them.
Yeah, it makes sense when you watch the film almost.
And if you do it without working for one of the crazy megalomaniac capitalists, they will come after you and force you to work for them.
Yeah, it's an allegory, people. It's an allegory for capitalism.
No, probably wasn't. But like the fact that it doesn't really comment on any of this is what makes it so disgusting to me. Like there's no,
I'll second that.
There's no moral compass. There's no, the movie at no point tells us, you know what, actually forcing women into prostitution is bad, because they all seem kind of, you know, of course they resist the actual violations, but no, after that they cooperate, they're happy, they're part of the clan.
Then they get killed a little bit, but it's all fine because they're just disposable characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
it's disturbing.
When you put it like that, it's fucked up.
Yeah. You can't really put it any other way, but yeah.
Yeah, you can't really put it any other way. It's like, you can't really defend that.
No. No. You can't. That's why it's one of the worst action movies of all time. Probably the worst action movie I've ever seen.
It's morally bankrupt.
Oh yeah.
And yet I like it. I don't know why. It's just, I think like it's just the style. It's just the style and the filmmaking that, like, I don't know. I just like how surreal it looks, how stylistic it is. It's just, I don't know. It's just like something about that just, like, it scratches that itch. Not so much the rape, okay? Let me be clear. I was nodding my head no the whole time, right? So much my head got tired by the end of this movie.
Yes, I believe that part. Yes,
there was so much rape in this movie. I just sat there shaking my fist.
And the bad guys, spoiler alert, don't really die on screen, do they?
Yeah, at least not the ones that are worth killing.
Yeah, it's like, where's the moral compass here?
I don't know. Maybe they were saving it for like an unmade sequel. But,
oh, okay. You know. Well,
yeah, not for the sequel they made, but for another one they didn't make.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even think that the other Buhachi Bushido film is even a sequel. I think it's just like the same story arc, but done differently.
Oh, same concept. Yeah.
Yeah, because I read.
Oh, let's watch that again.
Yeah, let's watch it again. This time, possibly with less rape, but who knows?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that's not a big problem with this movie is that it doesn't really have a satisfying climax. I mean, it has a great action scene at the end, but it doesn't really climax. Ironically.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we going to get into the final action scene a little bit now?
Yeah, sure.
It's probably the second best scene in the movie after the opening. I mean, there's lots of people being dismembered and their heads flying off, and that makes it okay, I guess. But the special effects are kind of wonky. You know, like the severed head flying through the air looks like they tied like a dummy head to like a clothesline and are like moving it across the screen a little bit. So it's not like convincing by any means, but I mean, after seeing all the horrible things that came before it, it's nice change of pace. Just seeing people being chopped up by a sword. They like, there's a great part where they like capture him with like these balsa wood tables. They're like, hey, we got him, we got him. And he just like chops like all like these like 1 millimeter thick tables with his sword and continues to kill them, which is fine. And they're attacking with ladders at one point. Why do they have ladders? There's like, it's like flat terrain. It's like, there's no walls to climb or anything, but it's like, hey, I got this ladder. Another guy says, hey, I got this ladder too. And there's like 5 guys with ladders attacking him, and they all die, fortunately, because you shouldn't attack somebody with a ladder.
Well, I've seen that like same maneuver in like a dozen samurai films. I don't know what it is with like a ladder. Maybe it's like supposed to like trip you and entrap you in like the holes or whatever, in the gaps.
Oh.
But,
yeah, I mean, yeah. It's fine for, like, a Jackie Chan action scene, like, Police Story 4, First Strike, when he's, like, fighting all the people on the ladder, and it's very well choreographed and stuff like that. Or when there's, like, a wall they're supposed to get over, like, it's the Alamo or something like that. But this movie, why do they have ladders? I don't understand.
Yeah,
it's also, before they capture him in the 4 balsa wood panels, we literally see him slash those same balsa wood panels. And then they're like, we got him.
That's true.
Bitch, you just saw him chop through those things.
That is true. Yeah. There's some good blood hoses, though. Like, when they, during the latter half of the film, you know, people getting stabbed or slashed with, like, a gallon of fake blood spraying out, which is, that's the good stuff. I mean, I can get behind that. But when it comes to the sexual violence, the lack of, like, any sort of commentary on it, this movie sucks. I mean, I hate this movie so much.
Yeah, I get that.
This is going to be the first film on the podcast where it's just trashed by, like, two-thirds of the host. Yeah. And even me, even I'm just like, yeah, I'm not going to defend some of this.
Oh, yeah. You can't. I mean, it's impossible to defend. I mean, I'll give it credit where credit's due. The beginning and ending action scenes are bloody and fine. I mean, I don't mind it, but everything in between, besides the lighting, is just the most god-awful thing I've ever seen in an action movie before.
I do think I owe you guys an apology. If I
had,
like, seen this recently, like, before we did this, I would have been like, yeah, let's not do this. I don't know what I was thinking.
It's absolute cinema.
I remembered the ending and the opening and some of the other scenes, and I was just like, yeah, let me nominate this for the top 250. And, you know, I will defend my opinion that I like it.
It's not for everybody, that's for sure. So don't show this to your grandma. She'll have a heart attack.
I really do love, during the final scene, how, like, you know, there's, like, ears and arms and heads getting sliced, and they just go flying through the air. In, like, this rather cartoonish way.
Yeah, it's so cartoonish compared to the rest of the film, but, hey, it's not rape, so I can get behind it.
Yeah, and I particularly love, it looks like almost like a play on stage, you know, like how it'll be all sort of stylized in that manner.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like it's on, like, a stage during that final scene.
Into the opening scene as well. Yeah.
Yeah, especially the opening scene as well, which, you know, brings it back to the whole sort of silent film sort of stylization.
Yeah, and I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, I guess you could call it, like, a bit of the old German expressionism.
Oh, yeah. It kind of reminded me of that, too, yeah. Or, like, something like Night of the Hunter, which was inspired by German expressionism itself. But it does kind of have that kind of, almost like a play-like quality to it, you know, at times, which is interesting. I saw that opening scene, and I thought I was in for a treat. Now, here's the thing. I did not know anything about this movie going in. I didn't know it was a rape film going in. So I was like, oh, this is going to be exciting. And then, like, all this stuff starts happening, and I was like, no! Why? Give me the brain bleach now! It's not what I expected from that opening scene.
Yeah, I probably, after I rewatched it, could have warned you guys, like, yeah, be prepared. There's going to be, like, a lot of stuff that happens that completely memory-hold.
Oh, well, this episode needs its own trigger warning. This is going to have, like, 12 trigger warnings at the beginning of it.
this is probably going to be the last episode that you guys hear from me. Uh-oh.
No, we want you back, but something a bit more family-friendly, right? Like something family-friendly, like Death Wish 2.
Yeah, Death Wish 2. That was probably the first movie I saw where I was just deeply uncomfortable, and I was like, what is this guy's problem? During the gang rape scene, I was just like, this is oddly pornographic. Is he getting off on this?
No, Michael Winner, you evil dog. Ugh.
Yeah, it still doesn't hold the candle to the Japanese.
No.
Yeah, Michael Winner looks tame.
Yeah, they know how to go sicko mode.
Yes. That is something I've noticed about, like, observing Japanese media, is they do go sicko mode a lot.
Yeah, if there's, like,
only
three rape scenes in a Japanese movie, then that's a family movie right there.
Yeah, it's like, bring the kids.
But I thought that this was, like, a very unique movie. You know, perhaps not a movie that's everyone. And quite frankly, having rewatched it, I don't know. Like, especially with what you two have said, it's just like, damn, is this like a intervention?
You need help. Yeah, this movie's unhinged.
Yeah, I definitely have to, like, probably screen check the next film that we do just to... the next one that I choose, you know.
Yes, yes. Yeah. IMDb Parents Guide.
I do want to preface that this was an idea that was thrown out there because it was a film that I nominated. Okay. So, yeah, my bad.
And I'll do it again unless you release the hostages or whatever. Yeah. I'll nominate it again.
So there's a scene in there somewhere that you already alluded to, Alberto, where the lead characters get set on fire.
Yeah.
And the ladies dress up, wear clothes for the first time to help them.
Yeah, they dress up like female ninjas, and they start rolling around on the fire to put it out. And one of the women afterwards cut my clothes open, and she just jumps out of them.
Yeah, it's like a 2-inch incision in her clothes, and she's instantly naked.
Yeah, it's an excuse to keep the gooning going for the audience.
If you're into that.
Back in 1973 in a Japanese theater.
Yeah, before the internet existed.
Yeah.
Now we have the internet, so we don't need to watch pervert Japanese cinema anymore.
It's obsolete. Yeah, don't make me watch that. No. I'm gonna have to call in sick for that episode. Yeah.
Look, I can be a little sick sometimes, but not that sick. All right,
Okay.
Don't worry about that.
But the fire scene is an adequate action scene, I'd say. You know, he throws a sword into a guy's belly, and they have like a blood hose going off. I think is that the scene with the blood hose? Yeah, that's pretty cool, I guess. And you know,
that was an awesome moment.
You got some people being lit on fire, which is fine. You know, I mean, you've seen it before, but it's always fun to watch.
Yeah, the duel with the ninja in the field was. I thought that was pretty cool.
Nah, that was a bad scene. But that was a bad scene. I don't know. A bit too much slow motion that didn't enhance the action, I'd say, but to each their own.
This is definitely an each their own episode.
Yeah, because I was looking at reviews for this on Letterboxd, and like the first page, like when the main page of this film on Letterboxd, all the reviews almost are ecstatic. Like, I love this film, and it's like, why? It's kind of disturbing, but it's like, why does this get so much love? I don't understand. Is it just because it's so transgressive that people can't take their eyes off it? I don't know.
Maybe it's just the filmmaking, because I feel like the filmmaking does elevate this, because if he didn't give a fuck, I wouldn't like this. I would have just been like, all right, this is a piece of shit. This is the worst movie I've ever seen. But the fact that the director put effort to give this the style that he did and really set it apart from all the other shit that was coming out around the same time.
Yeah.
I think that's what really speaks to people about the movie.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, and they feel naughty watching it. You know, I kind of get that a little bit, you know, because you watch like a pre-code film from like the early 1930s, and even though it's nothing compared to this or like anything made after like 1968 or whatever, you watch like a pre-code film from the early 30s and you're kind of like, oh, I feel naughty watching this because they have like one guy getting stabbed and it's like, oh, it's so naughty. Because you're like, you know, it's not something you expect to see from that time period. So, I mean, to watch this exploitation film, I guess I kind of get the appeal a little bit. Like, it makes you feel naughty a little bit. Like, oh, an early 70s Japanese film that's basically just one big scene of horrible things happening to nuns and all this stuff makes me feel naughty. You know, I don't know. I get it. Maybe a little bit. But I didn't like it.
Usually I find if I don't like a movie, I find it very hard to recommend people not to watch it. Because like, everybody has their own taste. And if you're into this shit, then watch it. Mm-hmm. But I just want to say right now, don't watch this. If you're into Japanese samurai movies, there's plenty of other stuff you can watch. We mentioned Lone Wolf and Cop.
Oh, yeah.
Way better movies. If you're just into exploitation movies in general, there's other movies, way better movies. If you're into exploitation movies with a lot of non-consensual sex, there's better movies out there. Go watch those instead. And like,
just go watch Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yeah.
Or Seven Samurai.
If you take away anything from this episode, don't watch this one. Watch Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yes. I'm not even that big a fan of Lone Wolf and Cub. They all kind of blend together for me, but it's still better than this.
Yeah.
Anything is almost better than this.
Yeah, I'm kind of regretting not nominating one of the Lone Wolf and Cub films instead of this.
There's a couple of them on the list. Pretty sure the second one is on the list, at least.
Yeah,
and maybe the first or the fourth.
Okay. I just remember them having like a bad opening scene that kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. It's like, here's our hero. Now he's going to execute a baby. And it's like, I don't want to root for him anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to root for him anymore.
But here's this scene where he prays for all the souls that he's taken.
That makes up for it.
Yeah. But, you know, killing babies still better than this movie.
Yeah.
Yes! Yes!
I'm like the Somehow. Only person who liked the movie.
I can't wait to see what score it gets next time we do the top 250. It's going to be like, the score is going to be like 110. Everybody else is going to be like a 1.
Yeah. So, Brandon, would you recommend this movie?
Avoid at all costs.
Okay. I had a feeling you were going to say that. Alberto, what about you? As a lover of Japanese cinema of all sorts.
You know, after the discussion we've had, it depends. You know, I mean, if you're used to, like, a lot of exploitation cinema, especially in a lot of Japanese exploitation cinema, especially sort of pinky violence sort of subgenre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, go for it. This is pretty good. It's going to get a 4K release pretty soon.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Oh, my God.
Yet no cure for cancer. There's something wrong.
Yeah, no cure for cancer, but we're remastering this film. Priorities of human civilization.
Oh. Yeah. So, we should be back next week with something a bit more fun.
We need a chaser after this.
Yeah.
A light chaser like Death Wish 2.
Yeah. In the meantime, follow the podcast, check out the website, join the Discord, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
And I think that it's not a question of what the censor does or doesn't do with the film. It is a tragedy that a British filmmaker should make such an appalling piece of nonsense, and it should receive general distribution and indeed as much attention as this film has received.
This is the point I wanted to make, Sir Michael Winner, because I'm going to leave for a moment the rape, just talk about how well or badly made the film is. I mean, I know this is a personal...